Johnny Gallagher has had an illustrious acting career. He won a Tony Award at the age of 22 for his performance in the Broadway musical Spring Awakening. He then went on to star in Green Day's American Idiot on Broadway, followed by Aaron Sorkin's HBO series The Newsroom, and then an appearance in the film Short Term 12. He will star on Broadway this spring in the production of Eugene O'Neill's masterwork Long Day's Journey in Tonight. However, his passion project has always been his music, and he has a new album out, his first album, entitled 6 Day Hurricane, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Johnny Gallagher Jr. to the roundtable this morning. Johnny, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
So how long have you wanted to do this, to put out your own album?
Oh, gosh. Perhaps my whole life, since I was a a kid, since I first heard music. I always thought, when I learned what a record was, I thought, oh, that might be nice to do one of those one day. So since I was a teenager, I guess I started writing songs when I was about 14, 15, and took me about 15 years to finally get a record of my own out there. So yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Is it a harder thing when you go down a musical theater route that becomes a part of your life and it's difficult to separate the two?
You know, doing musical theater, the actual time that it takes to kind of commit yourself to a project like that, that's one of the most challenging things, is that it's usually a long process. There's a lot of development. And then when you actually get the show on Broadway, you usually sign like an open-ended, maybe like a 9-month contract. And so then you're kind of doing the show for about a year, and it's 8 shows a week, and you're getting up there to do it every night. So it definitely does take that kind of toll. But the good news is that doing musical theater has really given me a lot of really devoted fans who got into Spring Awakening or got into American Idiot, and then curious about what I was up to in my own kind of creative endeavors, found their way to my music and have been very, very loyal. So I owe a lot in a variety of ways to the work that I've been lucky enough to do in musicals.
In listening to the album, and I think it is safe to say, and I'll let you address this, that it is very eclectic in nature. There are a lot of different sounds here.
Yeah, that's great to hear that lands. Because I think it is, there's a few styles and genres that get toyed around with on the album.
Is that because you want to try different things?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I listen to a lot of music, and I have a lot of love for a wide variety of different styles and different sounds and kind of sonic dynamics. And I think the reason that this record specifically turned out as eclectic as it is, as you pointed out, really came because we did kind of I don't know if it's unorthodox, but it was not the way that I intended to make the record when we went into making it. Was that my producer and I, instead of going through all of the songs that I had amassed in, 10 plus years of songwriting, we just picked the 9 songs that the band we had been playing with had learned. And we only had 6 days to record it, so we didn't have the luxury of time to kind of go through the long list and be like, well, do we want this song, that song, this song? We just said, okay, here are the 9 songs. Let's record them, and hopefully we get a record out of it. And I think that it was a bit of a roll of the dice. It was a bit of a gamble. You know, there are some that might say, it didn't work. You didn't get a record that tells a story. But the sequencing that we ended up getting with the track, I'm totally happy with. I love the way that it kind of plays with expectations, and there's a few peaks and valleys in there, and there's a few curveballs, and one song ends and kind of leaves you feeling one thing. You know, one of the biggest leaps I think of is, the Dead for a Year, which is a bit long and kind of morose, and a somber song comes right into Dangerous Strangers, which is one of the most up and kind of almost has a punk rock feel to it with the way it was put together. So there's a few curveballs there that were a little risky, but so far I think people have been into the way that it doesn't really get pinned down to just one kind of, corner musically.
So let's talk about some of the tracks on the album. Two Fists Full. This is tough vocals, strong vocals, and classic guitar, and obviously percussion, and it has a southern vibe to it.
Yeah, definitely. It has that kind of alt country rock kind of feel to it. that I'm a big fan of, that I've listened to for a long time.
Good Lord, boys, please be careful. She'll make you so hysterical. Shake you up like you didn't think possible. Well, she'll arrive on the red eye one day, and you'll have red eyes come Monday, and two fists full of your own hair. She's at it again, your head did the things your friends are predicting, though you said you didn't care that much, so much more. Trade is not fair, so beg and barter. Keep treading water and don't bleed your blood in the sea. Keep the sharks at bay and don't attract them. Once they're circling you, you won't outlast them. Just distract them as long as you possibly can. She's at it again, instead of losing your head. Try to remember you were fine before you met her. Take the things she has to teach you and run like hell. Run, run like hell. Run like hell. Waking up alone, get down south, cause I got a pain in the middle of my chest and it keeps me awake, and there's only one thing can make it go away. I got to get to the beach where I'll be some man for some dark haired girl with a headband and some tan. Nobody in NYC gives a toss about me. Nobody can spare any love. No one here cares if I come or go, but I hope someone in Sarasota does.
Sarasota Someone, to me, was, I kind of wanted to play with the idea of writing a song that if it was on in the background, at, you know, at your local bar, or if you heard it on the radio driving down the PCH in LA, you might just think, oh, hey, here's a kind of nice, peppy pop tune. But if you really kind of start listening, it's actually a song told from the point of view of a very lonely narrator. And it's actually about despair and loneliness and feeling that you're not fitting in. But it has that hopeful positivity of, oh, if I could just get myself to some other warmer place, I might be able to find love and I might be able to find some happiness and acceptance.
Have you found that place?
I feel like I kind of come in and out of it on a regular basis, as is kind of the plight of humanity.
So another title on the album and another song that you mentioned a moment ago is Dangerous Strangers. Tell us a little bit about this, because it is fast paced and as you say, a little more jaunty, let's say.
Yeah, definitely. That started as a song that I was a lot of these songs, it's kind of funny that none of them are necessarily super new to me. They're new to the listeners, but they're songs that I've been kind of working with or tweaking for. Some of them are as old as, you know, 9 or 10 years of gestation. But Dangerous Strangers, I started writing on my acoustic guitar, and I kind of gave it up for a little while because I couldn't really get the feel that I was trying to get by just playing it on an acoustic guitar. And I tried playing it in concert a few times, and I felt like, oh, I don't really have it yet. I don't really know about the verses. And then I finally got together with the band that ended up being my band for this record. And I had all these other kind of songs in my head that I'd been listening to about how I wanted it to build. And I thought, let's try playing it more like kind of a real kind of anthem with the kind of real rock and roll spirit. And the moment when it clicked was when I had Brian Delaney, my drummer, I just said, you know, after the first chorus, just come in with the bass drum and let's just see what that does to the song. Refusing to end, feels like forever, it was only seconds. Perfect strangers in perfect danger. The second he started doing that, we all kind of went, oh, okay, I see where this has to go next. And it came together really, really fast. And that was one where every musician just brought something like so perfect to the table, which was exactly what I was looking for. Even if I wasn't able to communicate it, it was kind of a little bit of we were all feeling that telepathy in that moment as we arranged that song. So it's definitely one of the harder, a little louder, more aggressive tunes on the album. And yet with all this love, I want to rip it up. I want to get dressed up. I want to destruct. I bet you know some things that I do not yet. If you show me, I will be your teacher's pet. Perfect stranger. Perfect danger, and so much later than I thought I would stay when I came.
You talked a moment ago about having that fan base through musical theater, and this really all started with Spring Awakening. And you win a Tony at the age of 22. Obviously, you don't expect that, but how do you look back on that experience now of how that has set things up for you?
It was surreal at the time, and I think it's grown almost even more surreal as I've kind of changed and grown and gone on to other things. When I think about it now, I look back and just think about how. Not that I didn't know it then, but how fortunate I was at the time to be as young as I was and to have stumbled into something as special and interesting and unique as Spring Awakening turned out to be. But it was a real blessing to get to work on such a interesting, creative project. And I learned so much from all of the different people that I worked with. And I learned a lot about music. I think ultimately I learned a lot about songwriting in the process and watching Duncan Sheik work on these songs and compose new songs and try new songs every night. It was incredible. It was kind of a once in a lifetime moment, not just for being so lucky to win that award, but being able to just find a really great creative environment that sets this tone up for how great working in an ensemble and learning as an actor and a musician could actually be. Because you know. Don't do sadness, not even a little bit. Just don't need it in my life. Don't want any part of it. I don't do sadness. Hey, I've done my time. Looking back on it all, man, it blows my mind. I don't do sadness, so been there. Don't do sadness, just don't care. And then you go into Green Day's American Idiot, and you're doing a music that a lot of us know. And yeah.
That must be different, because there is a sensibility that is just inherent in what you're doing that was not mm-hmm. the case with Spring Awakening.
Completely, yeah. Spring Awakening was totally new music. People were hearing it for the first time. With American Idiot, we were doing all of the songs off of American Idiot, which sold millions and millions of copies worldwide. And we're also doing a few of Green Day's other tunes that have been on some other albums. So people are coming to it with a bit of an expectation. And as we all know, Green Day is a huge band and big, phenomenal success. So they have a very wide, giant fan base. So their fans were kind of coming in, expecting something. And we felt a real, not a pressure that was put on us by anyone other than ourselves, because Green Day was so supportive in that process. But, you know, we felt that pressure to get it right and to make sure that we were kind of honoring what their music was about and what their spirit was about, so that fans of their music could come to it and find something that fit, that resonated with them. But that also people that didn't know Green Day could come to it and get their initiation into their music, which was one of the things that made me really happy, was that I think we had a lot of people come up to us after the show when we were on Broadway and say, you know, I had never heard a Green Day song until tonight, and I'm going to go home and buy all their records. And so it was cool to be part of that intersection.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. I don't know where it goes, but it's home to me, and I walk alone. I walk this empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams, where the city sleeps, and I'm the only one, and I walk alone. I walk alone, I walk alone. I walk alone, I walk out. My shadow's the only one that walks beside me. My shallow heart's the only thing that's beating. Sometimes I wish someone out there will find me. Till then I walk alone.
And then there are times when, during that run, you are on stage with Billy Joe Armstrong, who is the frontman for Green Day.
Yeah, he came in and did a long stretch of shows with us after we had been open for a little while. And it was amazing because we would go out and do that show without him and think, man, this crowd really digs us out here in New York. And then he got on the show and we walked out there and we went, oh, that crowd was nothing. This is a real crowd. You know, it was that thing. It's like, there's a, no matter how you cut it, there's always going to be a difference between, you know, people on Broadway that go out and feel like rock stars versus a real rock star going out on Broadway. And then you see the difference between the two. But those shows were amazing. They were the adrenaline. I mean, I don't know if I've matched in my life the adrenaline that I felt doing those performances with him.
You think that will be less with A Long Day's Journey and tonight?
It's definitely not going to be as rock and roll of an experience in that vein. I don't think so. After 4 hours of Irish Catholic dysfunctional family, Gene O'Neill, it might be a different kind of adrenaline, let's say.
So what leads you, that we're talking about the Roundabout Theater Company's production, which opens in April. So what kind of draw is that for you as an actor to say, okay, I want to do that kind of stretching. I want to do a classic piece of American theater.
Yeah, great question. First and foremost, I've never done one. You know, I've been really fortunate to create a lot of new works on stage, but I haven't done a lot of old works or revivals or classic pieces. And I'm not the only person that, you know, believes this, but Eugene O'Neill is one of, you know, I think the best and obviously the premier American playwright. And that play in particular has a lot of resonance with me. It's a play that I really love, and I've never actually seen it performed, but I've read it several times. And it's kind of a dream role. The role of Edmund is a character that I've always really loved since I first read the play. And I never thought that I would get the opportunity to do a production of it. And so when this started to materialize, almost about a year ago is when I first kind of caught word that it might be happening, that I might be so lucky to be involved. I just leapt at the chance to get involved. And I haven't done a play in 5 years. So it seemed like if I was going to come back to the stage, that I should do it with something that was really challenging and that shook me up and scared me a little bit and took me maybe out of an element that I'm used to performing in.
You haven't done a play in a long time. You were doing a series, and a darn good one, Newsroom, which was, of course, written and created by Aaron Sorkin. How does speaking the words of Aaron Sorkin change you?
Oh, it's great. It's so great. It's one thing it really does is it makes you want to be smarter. it makes you, in your own life, want to be able to spar it with that kind of wit and have that just that kind of the perfect thing to say at every moment, and never robbed of the gift of gab. But it's also really fun. It feels like a sport when you're doing those scenes with the other actors. It's like volleyball or something. It's all about keeping the ball in the air and keeping the thread going. And especially the big scenes. I would really like the scenes where there were four more of us in a room together at the same time, because it was kind of like playing chamber music or playing in an ensemble. Like if you miss your cue or if you drop the energy, then the whole piece suffers. So it really, it's not just an individual responsibility. You have a responsibility to yourself, but also to the ensemble, also to the writing, because you want to do it justice. But it's also really musical, the way that, it's funny to me that Aaron is clearly a big music fan, because he works a lot of music into his writing, and he picks a lot of the music that goes into things that he writes. And that's no surprise to me, because he writes, it's so symphonic, it has this energy, and it really has this thing where listening to it, it almost doesn't rhyme necessarily, but it almost feels like this beautiful poem that you could even set to music if you tried. I wonder if anyone's ever done that. Anyone tried to set a piece of Aaron Sorkin dialogue to music? Perhaps I'll do it, and it will be my my contribution to musical theater.
Your great moment, absolutely.
Yeah, my debut.
So here's the geekiest question I have for you.
Sure.
as we wrap up this interview, and that is going back to American Idiot, which I saw you in, I believe, four or five times, and
nice.
I love this show over this year.
Oh, I'm so glad.
So when I saw Birdman, I thought the only thing that came, a lot of things came through my mind, but the main thing that came through my mind as we were going through the bowels of the St. James Theater is, I wonder what it's like. I assume you've seen the film.
Yes, yeah. I went and saw it in the theater last year.
So what is it like to see a place that you inhabited for a year in playing American Idiot, better part of a year, to see this movie that takes place, there are sets, but pretty much takes place within the bowels of this theater that was your home for so long.
Yeah. I mean, it was so fun. It was really fun to watch it, because you'd be like, oh my God, I remember that hallway. Oh, I walked through it every night in my one break between Boulevard of Broken Dreams and St. Jimmy. When I had that little moment, I would run down there to my dressing room and grab some water. And then they would turn a corner and you would kind of see that they had kind of cheated a cut a little bit and be like, wait a minute, that's not where that door goes. but the funny thing about like working in a theater like that when you're there for such a long time is that it really feels like home. And you really feel like you're the only people that have ever done something in there. You really feel like no one else has been here before and no one will be here after. And that's, of course, not true. You just get very wrapped up in whatever it is that you're doing there, and you spend so much time there. So seeing Birdman actually gave me that great feeling of remembering like, all right, we're all just part of this continuum. We're all constantly moving through these spaces and adopting them and being adopted by them and working together to create some kind of beautiful piece of art, which was kind of perfect, because that's so much of the sentiment about that movie, about that kind of struggle for working on something and being proud of it and like creating good art that you can feel good about putting out into the world. And so it left me with this like great, super warm feeling when the movie was over.
Well, the new album is out. It is 6 Day Hurricane, and it is just terrific. And then Long Day's Journey in Tonight opens at the American Airlines Theater on April 3rd and runs through June 26th. Johnny Gallagher, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. Best of luck with all the great work you're doing, and thank you so much for all the good stuff you've done in the past.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
The new album is now out. His first album, it is 6 Day Hurricane. Also, a reminder that Long Day's Journey in Tonight opens on Broadway on April 3rd with previews beginning and running through the 26th of June. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
There's a fight breaking out in front of the gift shop as the morning meets the night. There's a There's cops all around, but when the deal goes down, there doesn't seem to be a single one in sight. There's a window of candles in the boardwalk chapel that's slowly starting to fade, as the whole congregation in a holy celebration sees everybody, everybody's gonna be saved. Everybody, everybody's gonna be saved. Everybody, everybody's gonna be saved.